Hello, everyone. Welcome to Gigi and the 561. I'm Pam Barker. Thanks for being here. I'm also Gigi. Some people call me that, and I love it very much. The world is a weird place, and there are people who study weird things, weird science. Do you know there's a book, or there was? I haven't checked lately. There is literally a book for every, or there was, a book for every state that said weird whatever. I'm in Florida. It would be weird Florida. I assume they're still out there. People like weird stories. And I have one for you today. I didn't know about this. In the 70s, Ford Motor Company, responding to the needs of the country, built a car based on what they felt was filling the need for both economy and efficiency. The car was affordable and it was efficient on gas. And it was called the Ford Maverick. Now, they really geared up and they overproduced. They overshot what the demand actually was. So they had all these cars, and what's going to happen to these cars if they're not selling? You can't just leave them on lots all over the country because they will be damaged in one way or another. The sun is terrible for cars. If you ever have to park your car in the sun for any extended length of time, you know it damages the paint. It fades the paint. It fades the interior. Salt water, where we are, we're right by salt water. We live on the water. Is very damaging to cars. Hail, all kinds of wind, storms, people vandalizing cars that are sitting out on lots. So they had all of this overproduction of these Ford Mavericks. So what to do with them? Well, guess what there is in Kansas City, Missouri? Owned by a real estate firm called Hunt Midwest, there is what is called a subtropolis. It's a man-made underground complex. It's made of limestone mines. And this particular one is 55 million square feet. And back in the day, in the 70s, it was very attractive, this place in Kansas City, Missouri, to Ford, because it maintains the same temperature. It's naturally climate controlled from 68 to 72 all year, every day of the year. And it's dark. So that is where they moved a whole bunch of Ford Mavericks into the subtropolis. The thing about that, they leased about 25 acres from the complex, which was ideal for these cars. The picture is very weird, so go and look at it. I feel they brought light in or turn lights on, whatever, in order to photograph. And I feel certain they turned those lights off when no one is there and let it be very, very dark. The thing about this subtropolis in Kansas City, Missouri, is that to this day, it is still being used. Many, many companies want to store whatever they have in this man-made cave. And who knew it was there? I never heard of it. And it was there in the 70s. I never heard of it. But if you've ever been in a cave, it is naturally cool. It can be really chilly, and it is the darkest dark there is. If you've ever been in a cave and they turn the lights out just to show you how dark it is, you know how at home in your bedroom you turn the lights out a little while, your eyes adjust, and it's like, yeah, I can. No, in a cave, your eyes never adjust, never. So companies that need to protect documents or whatever it is are still using to this day this subtropolis in Kansas City, Missouri. Weird, weird but true. There it is. Eventually, they moved the cars out as they were sold, and they are not there now. They're not. It's not like classic car underground. But I do encourage you. There's a place called Got Weird, and that's one place you can actually see these photos. They're just kind of randomly parked. They didn't. It's sort of like I would do it, where this is just randomly parked, no rhyme or reason to the park, the way they parked them. I'm a big believer in that learning never stops. You're never too old. You can learn from young people. Quite frequently, I do. You can learn from many sources. Taking it upon yourself to figure out, do I know everything I want to know about this particular bit of information? I'm big on fact checking. I will fact check. And that is why, if you're going to comment on something that I post in social media or if on here, go ahead and let me know if you take issue with it, if I have not properly fact-checked something, because it's a big deal to me. The truth is a big deal to me. One of the things that I've never been able to tolerate is someone being untrue. In other words, I'll put it nicely like that. So you can continue to learn always. And if you want to, you can now learn from a former president, Bill Clinton. There is a thing called Master Class. Under the umbrella of Master Class, many people teach classes. Many teach a variety of things. Anna Wintour, the fashion mogul, has a Master Class. You can learn just about anything if you drill down into Master Class. Well, Bill Clinton is doing one. And I'm sorry to tell you that the pricing is ambiguous. It looks like perhaps it's $120 to $180 per year. Now, again, it's very ambiguous. What do you get for that? Can you drop out? Can you get a refund if you don't use it all the way through? I think the only way to really get a pricing for the Bill Clinton class is to register for it. And I wasn't going to do that because my partner and I, Gerry, pronounced Gary, do love taking classes during the pandemic. We took a lot of classes, including one on American history. Even though we both felt like we knew American history, we took it through Yale. No, we had a lot to learn. You never know everything. You just don't. So in the Bill Clinton class, there's a variety of things that he is going to try to teach you. Whether you learn them or not remains to be seen. Public speaking, which many people fear. Facing criticism, which many people cannot handle. Assembling teams together. And then leading a team. Emotional intelligence. I really like that one. I think that one's really pretty good. How to measure your success. How to measure it after you think you have achieved it. This one I like a lot. It's the power of optimism. And I think that we could really use that a lot right now. I think helping you boost your public speaking is something that he could really help with because he's a very good public speaker. He's funny. He's self-deprecating. I'm big on self-deprecation. I don't mind me being the joke as long as I'm in on the joke, as long as we're together. There's a difference in being in it together and then laughing at someone as you say a joke. Most jokes really have truth in them. Ha ha, that was just a joke. Well, it really usually is not. But people that are self-deprecating and we're all in it together is one of my favorite things because we're human and we do have frailties. We do have flaws. Clinton is going to teach you in this class, he claims, making decisions while you're under pressure. How to successfully negotiate, even with other countries. So, although I won't be taking this class, I am currently looking at my partner and I. We talk together about the Age of Enlightenment. We both are big on that and have studied that in our past educational process. Enlightenment was a big part of the framework of our country. because our founders believed in those who were enlightened way before them. And they used that and they went with it. Enlightenment is incredibly important. So while we won't be taking Clinton's class, we will certainly be looking for the Age of Enlightenment. I want to tell you about people that invent things. We've all used the Bic pen, right? You've used the Bic pen. You know about the Bic pen. If you haven't, where have you been living if you don't know about the Bic pen? But we've all used the Bic pen. The Bic pen has not always been around. Back in the day, people used a quill and ink. Many forms of communication have gone through our hands. How do we communicate, whether it's in smoke signals or you know, the way that you could telegraph across the pond. Many ways of communication. But I want to talk about the Bic pen. That may seem weird, but why I want to talk about it is because I have such respect for people who invent. I have no talent to see something and go, I think I can make that better. I think I can make something out of thin air that would be beneficial to mankind. And thank goodness there are people throughout history that have done, are still doing fantastic inventions that change our lives. Well, such is the case of a Hungarian inventor in 1930. While observing children playing with marbles, they were making the move in a puddle of water. And he noticed when they moved, they left a trail of water in their wake. And a light bulb went off for him, apparently. I'm improvising that a light bulb went off. But he did come up with the idea, why not use something ball-shaped for writing with some kind of ink that wouldn't dry too fast? The ball would move like a marble and move the ink around. This Hungarian was named Laszlo Brio, B-R-I-O. He shared his idea with his brother, Gorgi, who was a chemist. And together they began researching, experimenting, what you do when you're trying to invent. Why are inventors never rich in their lifetimes? Usually, I mean, back in the day in particular. But they began to work with the concept of this ball and the ink and creating a pen that you could hold in your hand, move the ball, and the ink would write without drying. And it would control the flow, because a real ink pen back in the day, when people used ink, they had ink wells and pens there. They refilled and then off they went. But how could you find an ink that would prevent that from drying while you're moving the pen? Well, this was 1930 when they started. Then in 1931, they went to the Budapest International Fair, introduced their pen, but they didn't get a patent until 1938. Now I'm going to test you here, because if you know history, now we're talking Hungary, okay? What was looming in 1938? What was just around the corner? The World War II started, and the two brothers, at the start of World War II, they resettled in Argentina, for what that's worth. But they continued on with this pen project at the beginning of World War II in a garage in Argentina. They didn't have a lot of money, and they were unsuccessful because of that. They had no funding to help them, but they pressed on. They didn't give up. And finally, they secured a contract with British Air Force, and it boosted their popularity a bit and gave them a start into being successful with this invention of theirs. Now, we're talking from 1930. Now we're all the way to 1943. When they licensed their invention to Eversharp Faber, which is in the United States, for $2 million. Now, in 1943, unbelievable amount of money. But wait, it wasn't until 1950 when Marcel Bisch acquired the rights, not the ownership, but the rights to the pen. His ad exec, of course, recommended brilliantly, dropping the H, his last name was B-I-C-H, dropping the H, and the BIC, B-I-C, pen was founded, the BIC group. In that year, 1950, from 1930, future inventors, think about this, to 1950 when they launched the first BIC crystal pen, one of the most successful. We've all used BIC pens, right? I mean, if you haven't, where are you living? I want to know you if you haven't used a BIC pen. Weird but true. Inventing is hard, and being successful as an inventor is really hard. Who knew the history of every time you pick up one of those cheap plastic pens where billions are sold all over the world, the history behind it, starting in Hungary with a game of marbles in a water puddle. People have ideas all the time. Back in the day, I had a terrarium, you know, one of these closed-in little gardens you put on your desk. It started because where my partner worked, someone was doing a side hustle, trying to make some extra money, selling these terrariums. So we bought some, and then we bought more, and then we bought a giant one and had terrariums. They had plants. You didn't do anything to them. They took care of themselves, and they just, and then it fell out of favor. I don't even know. I'm sure you can still get them. I'm going to look into it. Have you ever had a terrarium? Let me know. But anyway, what I want to tell you about is taking that to on a different level, you know, something that I wouldn't have the patience to do because I'm not patient. I am patient in many, many ways, but in this particular case, I wouldn't have been able to hold out. In 1960, David Latimer, a man named David Latimer, he planted a spiderwort sprout inside a large glass jar. Now, this glass jar is very large, like the bigger than a body, a human body. At the bottom, and then the neck comes up to, you know, fairly narrow. And he only added a quarter pint of water, and he sealed it. He sealed it up just like that. Now, this is the part where I could not have done it. A few years ago, many years ago, my father had kind of this vineyard of his own along a fence, and it was a very small kind of thing, but a lot of grapes. These were wild grapes, sort of. Anyway, he didn't drink wine, but he wanted for he and I to make wine, and so we did. And I went and got all the stuff, these big jugs and this stuff, and you have to let it sit and it bubbles, and it's very scientific and very fun. And then we ended up bottling and giving the wine away, and it was white wine, by the way. That took patience, because it took a very long time to ferment these grapes with all the things that you have to do. So to do what David Latimer did, I couldn't have done it. No way, because it was hard enough with the wine that I made with my dad. What he did when he sealed that up, he did not open that bottle for 12 years. He opened it in 1972 just to add some water. Then he sealed it for good, never to be opened again. The self-contained ecosystem flourished for more than 60 years as a perfectly balanced garden and self-sufficient ecosystem. Why? Because the bacteria in the compost ate the dead plants, no dead plants, and broke down the oxygen released, turning it into carbon dioxide, essentially forming a microcosm of Earth. It was Earth inside the bottle. 60 years from 1960 is when he started. Perfectly balanced. Why I find this so beautiful is because I'm a big believer in the planet. I'm a big believer in caring for, nurturing the planet, doing the right thing for generations to come, setting the example for people that are younger, coming up, how to treat the planet. Climate change is real. We need to know that. If you don't believe it, that's your belief. I'm just telling you mine. I love what Mr. Latimer did. Please, if you will, if you want to see what it looks like, it's just like a giant terrarium back in the day, but really full of plants. Go Google it. If you want to find any of this stuff, Bill Clinton's class, the Mavericks being stored underground, or this giant terrarium, as it were, just Google it. Stuff's out there. You can always find it. Okay. I hope that you will visit our website, northpalmbeachlife.com, where these always rest. They're on 60 platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, and Amazon. My partner puts a lot of content on northpalmbeachlife.com and YouTube by the same name. But he also writes for other publications such as All Things Cruise and Splash Magazine Worldwide. Fun. Gerry Barker. I hope that you will read what he writes. It's fun. It's easy to read. Lots of pictures about travels. We just got back from Alaska, just got back from Maine. Travel is out there, but you know what? Home is good too. Home is good too. Thank you so much for being here with me. Go to Amazon, look for my books, Pamela Barker. I have them out there. They're just fun reads with characters that I invented that I would like to hang out with if I could make them real. Again, thank you for being with me on my podcast, GG in the 561. I'm Pam Barker. Stay with me.